This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. We visit Williamson this morning, where folks are taking an innovative approach to healthcare. They're trying to keep people from needing it.
When I met these people here, I start crying. I'm a grown man. I start crying. And I mean, that was a good feeling. And since I've been coming, I still feel that way.
That's coming up in a bit. This is West Virginia Morning. Nearly 6 months into the ongoing pandemic, West Virginia continues to see a surge in coronavirus cases. This as K-12 schools reopen and as the state continues to see the highest rate of spread in the entire country. Dave Mistich reports.
West Virginia ranks highest in the entire nation with an RT value of 1.28. In a Tuesday virtual news conference, Governor Jim Justice says the state is dealing with outbreaks at 34 long-term care facilities and 5 churches. Officials say at least 11 schools across the state are reporting cases of the virus. The West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources reports 1,176 new cases in the past week. Justice says the state's daily positivity rate stands at 6.02, which he described as very high. If the state's 7-day average of a daily positive rate exceeds 5%, education officials say school protocols will change. Although most county school systems reopened this week, 9 counties had case rates high enough to force them to open the year in a virtual setting. The governor says 2 schools in Brooke County have each reported a case of the coronavirus. He also says staff from schools in Kanawha, Lincoln, and Mingo have tested positive. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
The fall rafting season on West Virginia's Gauley River gets started this week. Caitlin Tan reports.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will begin lowering Summersville Lake to its winter level through releases at the Summersville Dam starting Friday. The weekly releases will continue through October 18th. The releases form more than 100 rapids on the Gauley, which drops more than 650 feet along its 24-mile route in southern West Virginia. Rafters will also notice a change in river levels and conditions on a stretch of the nearby New River. Starting this week, a 2-month project at the Hawk's Nest Dam will cause parts of the river to rise. The Hawk's Nest Tunnel has diverted water from the New River to power a hydroelectric plant since the 1930s. The tunnel will undergo an inspection in which a nearby reservoir will be lowered by 25 feet. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan.
Classes back in session for colleges and universities across the Ohio Valley, but many students have not returned to campus because of coronavirus concerns. Aaron Payne reports that while colleges and universities will have to deal with the financial impact, the towns they're located in will also feel economic impact.
The first day of classes at Ohio University is subdued this year. A few students walk across the Athens, Ohio campus wearing masks. A group sits socially distanced on blankets on the green. The university opted to bring back roughly 2,000 students to campus, while the remaining 10,000 or so began the first few weeks of the semester with remote learning. In an interview with WOUB Public Media, professor and economist Richard Vetter said the school will feel the absence of students, and so will Athens without the students that normally more than double the population here and provide both patrons and workers for businesses in town.
Income taxes revenues vary with, obviously, the number of people working and the amount of money they make. Sales tax revenues, more or less the same thing. More people make, the more they spend.
Vetter said college towns will see a drop in tax revenue and then face two options, raise taxes or make cuts. College towns across the Ohio Valley face the same economic uncertainty. Revenues from students, events, and employees are not going to come in like they did before the pandemic. The economic impact will not be limited to a lack of students. Game days at Milan Pushkar Stadium in Morgantown, West Virginia can bring crowds of up to 60,000. The crowds cheering on West Virginia University's football team can be larger than the most populous city in the state. But when the Mountaineers take the field for their home opener against Eastern Kentucky University later this month, there will be no fans in the stands. And the athletic department will likely reduce the capacity for the remaining games. John Deskins runs the Bureau of Business and Economic Research at WVU. He says the loss of fans will be felt by the local economy beyond ticket sales.
If out-of-state people come in and spend $1 million on hotels and restaurants and bars, that directly is part of the economy.
He says the loss will certainly leave a hole in the budgets of Morgantown and beyond, but he notes that it could be an equal financial risk to bring 50 to 60,000 people together during a pandemic.
I think the calculation is the loss associated with trimming back the capacity of the games is less severe than the potential loss that would be associated with another outbreak.
Deskin says funding from the federal government's CARES Act might be able to mitigate some of the loss in revenue. Another factor college towns will have to deal with is the loss of jobs if their institutions continue to lose funding. Ohio University already faced financial problems before the pandemic. COVID-19 pushed those issues further and resulted in layoffs that began in May. Those employees and supporters participated in drive-by protests circling campus, asking that the job cuts be put on hold until after the pandemic. But the university faced more cuts to higher ed from the state, which reduced the general revenue fund by $776 million for the last 2 months of last fiscal year. More layoffs could be a possibility. While unemployment compensation is important for those laid off, it doesn't help the loss of income tax Athens faces.
If you get unemployment insurance, you do pay state income taxes on it, but the local municipal income taxes don't apply to it.
That's Wendy Patton, a senior project director for the left-leaning Policy Matters Ohio. The policy group recently released a report on how cuts from the state could impact local budgets. Patton argues that Ohio should instead dip into its roughly $2.7 billion rainy day fund.
If it's not raining now, I don't know what you consider to be a storm.
Patton says people have been taking care of each other during the pandemic. And as college towns around the Ohio Valley face massive revenue losses, she wants federal and state governments to take care of them. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne in Athens, Ohio.
The coronavirus has also taken a toll on several of West Virginia's rural hospitals, which were having financial problems before the pandemic. During the first few months of the COVID-19 stay-at-home order and work shutdown, three Mountain State hospitals folded: Fairmont, Bluefield, and after more than 100 years in the community, Williamson Hospital in Mingo County closed. On one of the most recent episodes of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's program, Us and Them, host Trey Kay spoke with folks in Williamson about the impact of losing their hospital.
Well, the closing of Williamson Memorial Hospital it's a definite deficit in our community because we're an hour and a half away from Charleston, an hour and a half away from Huntington.
That's Dr. Donovan Beckett. Everyone knows him as Dino Beckett. He knows Williamson probably better than anybody. He grew up here after medical school in West Virginia, where he specialized in osteopathic medicine. He came back to Williamson in 2003 and opened a private practice. At that time, Beckett says doctors were leaving West Virginia in droves. Legal liability issues were pushing doctors out of business altogether. The economy in Mingo County was once based on coal mining and suffering from a long, grinding downturn. Many families were poor and sick.
In our area, we have lots of health conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, coronary artery disease, COPD, a lot of physical injuries from manual labor, those types of things. So it was a basic primary care practice, but we were pretty heavily in diabetes, coronary artery disease, and hypertension, obesity.
In 2011, Beckett opened a free clinic once a month in his offices. It grew in frequency and size. And a few years later, he turned the practice into a nonprofit, the Williamson Health and Wellness Center. He became the medical director and CEO. When Williamson Memorial Hospital closed, Beckett saw it as an opportunity to expand. He bought the hospital for just over $3.5 million. When Beckett opens the hospital, it will be an extension of the Health and Wellness Center.
I'm a physician first and foremost, but I'm also the CEO. To me, I think that's a secret sauce to why we've been able to be successful, is because I get to hear every day when I'm seeing patients what are the real-time problems and how that can be, from a physician and an administrator, how we can work those instead of having the dichotomy and different thought processes. Me being able to bring those two together, it just, I mean, for me, makes it easier to see through that and then bring that to the board to be able to help bring on new programs.
Williamson is a city of about 3,000 people. However, the Williamson Health and Wellness Center's service area includes 50,000 to 60,000 people from several counties. The majority of the center's patients are low income and uninsured. As a nonprofit federally qualified health center, the government subsidizes a percentage of the center's overhead costs.
But we also see patients and we generate revenue from seeing those patients. So what we do with that money is we reinvest that back into the clinic, but also we feel that Williamson Health and Wellness is the economic driver for our city, and we're pushing to help develop more opportunities for the people that live in the area.
Over the years, Beckett has forged a reputation as an innovator. Mingo County was a food desert, so he did something about it. About a decade ago, he started a local food program that's still going strong. It includes a traditional farmer's market, but also provides produce boxes for low-income patients or those with underlying health conditions. On Saturdays, a mobile unit delivers food to people in remote areas. In 2011, Beckett created the Mingo County Diabetes Coalition. Patients in the program receive education and visits from community health workers. Beckett says the program really works. Patients are able to control their diabetes. Costs are down. The successful program has become a model that's being replicated in other counties and states.
So, if we were able to take a patient and keep them out of the emergency room in a hospitalization, you basically employed one of our healthcare workers. So it's a very easy decision for somebody that's looking at our program to see how they could improve their healthcare costs. When you look at the amount of success we were able to have and translate over that whole diabetic population, it's an amazing cost reduction.
Beckett is still working on reopening the Williamson Hospital. Thankfully, there are relatively few cases of coronavirus in the area. However, during the first months of the pandemic, the Health and Wellness Center, like most other health facilities, lost money from a drop in patients. Its 100 employees have kept their jobs, but they've had to work fewer hours.
I always take the elevator.
Recently, patients like Cornelius Murphy started coming back to the center.
Hell yeah!
Murphy's 58 years old. He used to work in construction.
They laid me off, laid everybody off.
Murphy says he found out he had diabetes 3 years ago. He was in and out of hospitals and nearly went into a diabetic coma. Despite his frequent trips to the emergency room, he says nobody told him how to manage his illness.
The doctors there didn't do anything for me. They didn't tell me how to take my shots or nothing. I was all confused. So I was doing everything wrong, trying to listen to other people. And a friend of mine told me about the Wellness Center. My friend got me an appointment over here, and that's how I heard about it.
Murphy lives in Logan. He has a 45-minute drive in a borrowed car to get to the Williamson Health and Wellness Center. He used to have appointments 3 times a week. Now he needs to come just once a month or so.
My diabetes did help me so much. It's under better control now. I prefer to come here because they work with me. Everything's here. Eye doctor, foot doctor. I don't have to go everywhere else, Charleston or Huntington or out the way to see a doctor. Everything's here that I need.
As a part of his diabetes care, health workers stay in close contact with Murphy to support his treatment plan.
And I love him for that. When I met these people here, I start crying. I'm a grown man. I start crying. And I mean, that was a good feeling. And since I've been coming, I still feel that way. They call me 2 times a week, check on me, see am I eating right, do I need any medicine, if I can make it to my appointment. I love this place. I tell everyone about this place.
We've been listening to an excerpt from one of the most recent episodes of our show, Us and Them, titled Forced Apart, The Delicate and Crazy Dance of American Healthcare. You can download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation and the West Virginia Humanities Council. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.